The Bible is full of tough stories. Some of them get overlooked by the regular lectionary, but you're starting to see that some of these soap opera sounding stories do not get skipped over in the narrative lectionary. And poor Jen has to talk about that story that you just heard with the third through fifth graders in Sunday school later and find a way to make that a lesson for them. But this is the work we do as people of faith, is to try to absorb these stories that the people of God saw fit to be a part of our story. And what you just heard of Joseph being tempted by Potiphar's wife is a story that continues in our second reading, Genesis 39, verses 11 through 23. One day, however, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and while no one else was in the house, Potiphar's wife caught hold of his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called out to the members of her household and said to them, "See, my husband has brought among us a Hebrew to insult us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice, and when he heard me raise my voice and cry out, he left his garment beside me and fled outside." Then she kept his garment by her until his master came home, and she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to insult me, but as soon as I raised my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled outside." When his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, saying, "This is the way your servant treated me," he became enraged. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. He remained there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. He gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's care all the prisoners who were in prison, and whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The chief jailer paid no heed to anything that was in Joseph's care because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This is our third week working through the narrative lectionary, a Bible reading plan that is trying to help us all to better understand how all the different Bible stories connect to make one big story, and to help us find ourselves in that one big story, to see how the Bible really is much more relevant to our lives than maybe most of us think. We're continuing on in the book of Genesis this week, and Genesis, as most of you know, is the very first book of the Bible, and considered by many people to be its literary crown jewel. I don't know if any of you have seen it before, but the journalist and writer Bill Moyers, he wrote a whole huge book just dedicated to all sorts of commentary on Genesis and had a whole series about it. There's so much there. Genesis is about 60 pages long, and 13 chapters of that 60 pages, nearly a third of the book, is dedicated to this one main character that we hear about today, to Joseph. So he's obviously really important for us to be thinking about. And we need to understand something about Genesis as a whole before we dive into Joseph's story. That Genesis was not written to be a book of moral teachings like the Sermon on the Mount. It was not meant to teach us all how to behave, because the people who heard the story of Genesis first, they were the people of Israel who were just newly freed from 400 years of slavery. So they were embarking on this new life of freedom, but they were so afraid, and they needed to be reminded that God had always provided for their forefathers, that even in the worst of times, God had not forgotten about them. So Genesis is like their family album. And even though it's so long ago, it's our family album too. Now, I don't know about you, but my family is not perfect. I know some of us might even feel embarrassed sitting there on Sunday mornings because we know in the back of our minds, "Ooh, I just had a terrible argument right on the drive here to church, of all things, with my family." Or if someone brings up a member of our family, we smile and change the subject because our relationship with them is at best awkward and at worst broken. So we don't want to talk about that. Maybe a lot of us have family relationships that make us feel like because they're not what we hoped they would be, maybe we're not worthy to be God's people. But the story of Joseph helps all of us to see it differently, because when you look up dysfunctional family in the dictionary, this family could be that family. Last week, we heard about Abram getting his call to leave everything that he knew, and God told him, I'm going to give you endless amounts of descendants. And it seemed impossible because Abram's wife, Sarah, was barren. She couldn't have children. And yet, many descendants were promised to them, and Joseph is proof that that promise came true, because Joseph is the son of Jacob, who is the son of Isaac, who is the son of Abraham. And they have all kinds of other brothers and sisters and descendants along with them. So Joseph is living, walking proof that God's promises came true. But then just a little aside here. I know the story of Joseph in part because of pop culture. How many of you have seen the musical Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat or performed in it? I was looking for some embarrassing photos to prove my high school participation in that musical to put up on the bulletin board, and I couldn't find them. But I do encourage you to watch that musical because it really helps the Bible story to come alive. And Joseph's story really reads like something from modern day, ripped from our modern day headlines. It has everything. Human trafficking and slavery, sexual assault, wrongful accusation, false imprisonment, all kinds of saucy stories that you would expect to see today in today's news, and it happened to Joseph. But first, his dysfunctional family. Joseph is the youngest of 12 sons, and they were born to four different women, which was very common back then. But they were 12 sons of Jacob, and Joseph was the favorite child. Now, we know parents aren't supposed to play favorites, but Jacob really did play favorites, to the point that he even bought his son a very beautiful multicolored coat to show that he was basically the supervisor over their family work. And the other brothers, the other 11, hated Joseph for this. Joseph did not make this any easier on himself because he would go around telling his brothers about dreams he had, about how they were one day going to bow down to him. So this was pretty obnoxious and not very smart, because Joseph's brothers wind up scheming to sell him into slavery, and they tell his father that he had been killed by a wild animal. Joseph winds up being sold as a slave to Potiphar, where we find him now. Potiphar is the second in command, the captain of the guard for Egypt, for the Pharaoh in Egypt. And so he's a very important man, and Joseph is his slave. Now, we do not hear a lot about God in the 13 chapters about Joseph, but it does say over and over, the Lord was with Joseph, and therefore everything that he did prospered. And before he knew it, Joseph was promoted to running everything in Potiphar's house. Potiphar didn't have to worry about anything. He trusted Joseph that much. Talk about making lemonade out of lemons. So he got pulled from this low place into a high place. But then Potiphar's wife very aggressively tries to seduce Joseph, and to his credit, he does not give in. He could have said, you know, the world has been pretty nasty to me. Here I am, a favorite son being sold into slavery. I don't owe anybody anything. I'm just going to do whatever I feel like it. He could have said that, but he didn't. He said no, and he tried to flee the situation. Yet because Potiphar's wife had more power than Joseph, she was able to get the upper hand, and she lied and twisted the story and wound up getting him thrown into prison, which again sounds like a modern-day story. We've heard so many things about how people in power are able to manipulate those under them in times of harassment and sexual assault. So I know this week when I was talking with other pastors, they were constantly making that connection to things like the Me Too movement. But in any event, here, Joseph is the one who's the victim. He winds up in prison, and he had not done anything wrong. It's interesting because they keep saying Joseph was his father's favorite, and Joseph was so highly favored by God. Yet things have not worked out very well for him so far, have they? I'm reminded of another musical, The Fiddler on the Roof, where the main character says, Lord, I know that we are a chosen people, but can't you choose someone else for a change? Is this what it means to be chosen? Constant trouble? Joseph's life is a series of peaks and valleys, ups and downs. He is the favorite son, and then he's a lowly slave. He goes from that to being the highest slave, but then he is a forgotten prisoner. It says he remains in prison. We don't know, we don't get to know what Joseph was thinking or how he was feeling when all of these terrible things were happening to him. But what we do know is that wherever he goes, he prospers. So he obviously does not just sit around stewing and raging and brooding over how unfair life had been to him. Instead, he is kind enough and hardworking enough that he gets noticed and put in charge of things, like the operations of this prison he's in, like Potiphar's house. People recognize that there's something special about Joseph, but yet there was no freedom in sight. So life was not working out the way that he had dreamed so far. And here I would ask us to pause and take a breath and consider, how do we deal with the disappointments in life? They are the reality, aren't they? They come one after another, even with the good things. Isn't that one of the first lessons we learn when we grow up from childhood, is that life often just is not fair? We so want it to be, but it's often just not fair. And what do we do with that? Human beings have always wrestled with this problem. That's why in the prayer book of the Bible, the Psalms, 50 of those Psalms, over a third of the Psalms, are Psalms of lament, crying out, complaining, asking God, why is this happening? 50 Psalms are like that because human beings have always wondered about this. We've all been where Joseph sat, maybe not in prison, maybe not as a slave, but in a place where it felt like we had to wonder, is life going to get any better? Is there more to life than this? Maybe we were in a dead-end job or no job. Maybe we had a health problem and the doctors couldn't come up with a plan. Maybe we were in a marriage and there was so much hurt and resentment that even if we wanted to repair it, we couldn't figure out where to begin. We've all had situations where we sat where Joseph sat, and we want to believe that God was with us, but there are just times like that where it seems like God is hiding, and it's not fair. If God is good, and if we try to be good, then why can't things just go well for us? Maybe we tell ourselves that when things start going better for us, when it's clear that God is being faithful to us, then we will start being more faithful to God. A lot of us have said that inside. But the question from this Joseph story that really confronts us is this: can we be faithful right where we are, right with what we're dealing with? I've heard it said, interpret your circumstances by God's love, not God's love by your circumstances. Interpret your circumstances by God's love, not God's love by your circumstances. Because Joseph did prosper in part, he saw a reason to continue to be faithful. Part of why he prospered is that he saw a reason to keep holding on, to keep to his integrity. And the main way that he expressed that was how he treated others around him, with respect, with integrity. He stayed true to who God called him to be. And here is where we come to our theme for the next few weeks of stewardship. We are following the stories of the narrative lectionary, but we're looking at them through the lens of our theme of building relationships. When we think of how generously God gives us all the blessings in our life, often the church says we offer back to God what it calls time, talent, and treasure. So we give what we can financially, we offer our service, we offer our energy, but an often overlooked part of stewardship is the element of reconciliation. Our Jewish brothers and sisters are meditating on reconciliation during the season of Yom Kippur, and I think it's a great chance for us to meditate on the same thing. As you can see from the gathering thought in your bulletin this week, right on the top in the front, for the next 4 weeks it'll be there. Our relationships really do matter to God. God even says, hold off on your offering if one of your relationships is broken. That's part of your offering, is to take care of that. If our relationships with others are broken, our relationship with God will suffer. And the reverse is true as well. It's a give and take. If we do not have a genuinely open, trusting relationship with God, our relationships with other people won't be all they can be either. And that's why we've started today, when we think about building relationships, with the closest, most personal one possible, and that's me and God, you and God, each one of us. And Joseph helps us to look at that. Most of us, before we even really know God, we know our families, right? They're tied up together. Those formative years when we're so young, what do we know first? We know our parents or our siblings, our families. So maybe our relationships, like with family, can actually help us to get to know God better, even through the ups and downs. They can help us. Joseph's family relationships were very rocky, and yet his faith wound up turning those around. They really had an impact based on his faith. This episode that we heard today in church, this seedy episode of Joseph's story, is not the whole story. Joseph winds up interpreting the dreams of Pharaoh's officials while he's in prison, and he does such a good job that he gets called in to Pharaoh himself to interpret his dreams. And based on those, based on how well he does that, he gives Pharaoh such wise advice about preparing the whole land for a 7-year famine that would affect everyone, including Joseph's family so far away. Joseph's advice was so good that the Pharaoh said, "I'm going to make you my grand vizier, the second in command." If any of you saw Aladdin, it's like Jafar, the second in command of all of Egypt. So again, Joseph is uplifted from a very low place. And so when his brothers and father are in the midst of that famine years later, and they hear that there's food in Egypt, they go because they're hungry. And they're shocked because Joseph is not dead. He's not a slave. He is in this place of enormous power. And they're afraid because Joseph, in that position, he could enact revenge. He could finally get the justice that he deserves. But instead, Joseph would wind up telling his family, "What you intended for evil, God intended for good." I love that. What you intended for evil, God intended for good. And so he forgives them. Isn't that incredible? Reconciliation really is possible. And sometimes it does take a while. It could take years. But even the deepest hurts and betrayals can be healed with God's help. And could Joseph have done this without God's help? I don't think so. Joseph's restored relationship with his family, it mirrors God's restored relationship with us. He refuses to reject his people despite everything that they've done. Why? Because they are his. And we are God's, so God cannot give up on us. And God might choose to work out our blessing through some strange ways. He might use an obnoxious kid's bragging like Joseph, or dysfunctional families, or thankless jobs, or even personal suffering. But God will work all things together for our good. And if we believe that, it will overflow into how we live out all of our relationships. So can we believe that? Perhaps that's our first challenge during this stewardship season, is to work on believing that that is true, to be able to say, as the songwriter Leonard Cohen said so beautifully, "Even when it all goes wrong, I'll tip my hat to the Lord of Song with nothing but hallelujah on my tongue." Amen. As we think about relationships, we have a special